come ashore?
Yes, it did. It came right across, right down over top of us, right there.
There is the Hurricane Landfall Project truck. It's all set up, strapped down. We're going to turn all the switches on in just a little while. Standing outside of the Chevy Tahoe, we are getting into the eye wall of Hurricane Gene right now. Four came in on shore here along the southeast coast of Florida.
These little bullet cams right here that we will use to record that surge.
Hello again. I hope you're doing well. I am Mark Suddeth, and this is Stories from the Hurricane Highway Season 4. Yes, it is kind of hard to believe that this is the fourth year that I have been producing this podcast series here on Patreon and Hurricane Track Insider. But here we are, and we have a lot to go over in this season. We'll take a look back at 2009, 2010, 2011, and then we will end with 2012. And what an ending that is going to be, the last episode of Season 4. That'll happen sometime in May, and I'm telling you, that is going to be fantastic. I already know what it is going to be about, a great conclusion to Season 4. But we're not there yet. We're just getting started. It is early December 2022 that we're beginning Season 4 here, and we have a lot to go over. I'm going to introduce you to several new characters, as it were. Of course, this is non-fiction, and these are very real people, but in my story, and my stories plural, these are very much the characters that have come to help me. They have shaped a lot of what I have done during my career, and we're going to meet some of those folks as they enter my life over these next few years that we're going to talk about here. And I'm going to also talk about my continued perseverance. I think that's the best word. As I worked to keep Hurricane Track and the whole project alive, especially considering the loss of the major partnership that I had with Lowe's. You know, that was a big setback, and I had to reinvent myself and certainly work with my family. There was a lot of stress, and it was a very difficult time period trying to figure out what I'm going to do post-Lowe's. 2008 was the first total year, the whole year, where I was more or less on my own without a major corporate sponsor or partner. And we talked about that in the Season 3 version of this podcast, of course. But yeah, you know, I had to start sort of from scratch and figure out what I'm going to do, reinventing everything, hanging on, whatever. That's all part of the process, and I think that's important to talk about as you continue to get to know me and how I have evolved through this project over the years. And I'm going to introduce you to a new supporter, a new sponsor that came on board in 2009. I wasn't completely on my own because of Hurricane Ike and the coverage that I had, the major exposure that I had with CNN. You remember there was that one moment where the Ellen DeGeneres show called me and wanted to have me come out to LA. It didn't ever happen because I couldn't get off of Galveston. And sadly, Ellen didn't send a helicopter for me. That would have been cool. And if they had, I would have made sure Mike Watkins came with me, of course. He was helping me during Ike. But all kidding aside, there was a lot of exposure for Hurricane Track, for Mark Suddeth, for what we were doing as a community. And it really was, even back then. I know we call it crowdfunding now, and it is a big community-based project, and we're more engaged as a community than ever before, way out in the future, which is now, you know, 2022 versus 09. Back then, we didn't have, maybe there was Discord, but I certainly wasn't aware of it. There was Twitter, there was Facebook, and different forms of social media that were still in their infancies in 09. And I think I actually joined Twitter in 09. I should find the first tweet. Show note. I'm going to make a production note to find my first tweet. And I'll talk about that as well later on in this episode. As I record this, I can go back and I can put things in that I need to and just kind of, you know, think about things through stream of consciousness and then, bam, make stuff happen. So I'll do that. I'll look up my first tweet. It might not be in this episode. It'll be the appropriate time sometime during 2009. I think that's when I joined. But anyway, sorry I got on a tangent there. A lot happened. A lot did happen. And there was A lot of exposure, of course, because of Ike and even Gustav before Ike. And that led to another smaller but important sponsor that wanted to support what I was doing. And I'll talk about that as well. And then there was also something really big that was happening with a major American icon in the world of media, something that would be very important further down the road in my metaphorical hurricane highway here, once we get past 2012, that would, this change that was going to happen with a major icon in the media was going to have a huge impact on me after we get through 2012. So it's sort of a cliffhanger, what happens. And you might be able to figure it out, but we're going to talk about this big change that was happening with a major icon in the media. So yeah, we got a lot to go over here in the fourth season, the fourth installment of this podcast series. I really appreciate how we have grown Patreon and the listenership to the podcast. More and more feedback I have received through messages and even emails, but I have done what I really wanted to do, and that is to keep it private. In other words, this is not on Spotify. Now, look, I could get a lot more viewers or listeners, whatever you call it, ears, right, tuned into this, but that's not the point. The point is you folks support this. We are a community. You know, a lot of you I've gotten to know over these last few years through my travels, meeting you face-to-face. More and more people have been able to do that, and that means a lot to me. So I feel like, you know, that word family, it gets tossed around a lot, and I don't use that term loosely at all. It is like a family. It's like a bunch of friends and family, you know, like a gathering, and I really appreciate that. It means the world to me, and so for me to be able to share these sort of inside, not secrets, because they're not really secrets, but just these stories. Again, I've said it before, it's like we're all sitting around at a big dinner table or around the campfire or we're on a long road trip, stuck with each other. And some of the people that have helped me, especially these last few years, heck, my whole career, a lot of time spent with Mark Suddeth, you know that I can tell stories. And that's what this is all about. There are a lot of stories. There are a lot of adventures. There are a lot of things that were so positive and wonderful and innovations. You know, just, it's amazing. And then there were the negatives. You know, it's not all been sunshine and rainbows, as they say, whoever they is. That's a great term, by the way, because it hasn't. And 09 really is the embodiment of that. That I won't say it was rock bottom. That's a little overdramatic, but it was rough. Starting 2009 was rough. You know, I was coming off of 08 and had a lot of expectations to really grow the Hurricane Track premium services, you know, what we now know as crowdfunding, and we do it through Patreon. Back then, it was all through PayPal and, you know, just trying to get people to sign up and become a part of this. And it just didn't latch on. It didn't, I don't know. I don't know what the difference is between 08, 09 and 2018, 10 years later, when I really started Patreon in full force, so to speak, like I really dedicated a lot more to it. I don't know, maybe the time just wasn't right, that everything happens in due time. My YouTube grew, you know, Patreon grew. Hurricane Track, though, has been around since 99. Whatever, you know, it's a big mystery to me, but it certainly didn't come together the way I'd hoped in 08 with those two big hurricane events that really helped to kind of put Hurricane Track back on the map. So I had to, you know, figure it out. What am I going to do? And we're going to talk about that because, as you know, obviously, here we are coming up on the end of 2022 and why we will get to this year in a long feature episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. You kind of already know, not the ending, but how things have progressed. But again, how did we get from then to now and what were all of the adventures and misadventures along the way? Mostly adventures and mostly very, very positive. But as I said, we'll talk about some of the negatives, how I dealt with those, the different people that helped to prop me up. You know, it's not all me. I might be the face of it, the name on it. You know, Mark Suddeth, HurricaneTrack.com. My kids make fun of me, by the way. They'll do that. It just sometimes drives me nuts. They'll just break into it. Mark Suddeth, HurricaneTrack.com. I'm like, come on. you know, that's what puts shoes on your feet. Don't make fun of me. But yes, I might be the face of it and the name of it, but there have been a tremendous amount of people that have helped me along the way. And I look forward to introducing you to some of those people as we get through these next few years in season 4 now of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. All right, one of the things that I wanted to kind of touch upon is a big change that happened with an American media icon actually in 2008. This kind of blends between 2008 and into 2009. It'll spill into 2009. And so it's relevant to season 4 here. And it's also going to be very relevant several years down the road, as you'll see eventually. And that icon, that media icon, was the Weather Channel. Now, the Weather Channel started when I was a kid. It was actually launched in 1982 in Atlanta, Georgia. And it actually was the brainchild of a couple people, including John Coleman. And they kind of started that whole idea in 1980. Took some time to gather all of the investments and the different talent that would eventually start the Weather Channel in Atlanta. And they founded it in like mid to late July, something like that, in 1980. It was John Coleman, like I said. John worked over at ABC owned, so that's like an owner-operator. You know, you have different ABC affiliates. Fox has that, CBS, you know, NBC. So this was an ABC network-owned station. That was WLS in Chicago. And John was a forecaster for Good Morning America. And he also worked with a gentleman named Frank Batten. And he and John kind of started this, if I understand it correctly, Landmark Communications. It now is called Landmark Media Enterprises. And anyway, it took him a couple of years. You know, you think about the 80s. We don't have the internet, you know, and you can't just put something out there and raise a bunch of venture capital money overnight, like we've seen stuff happen at light speed in recent years. In the 80s, it took longer. So it took a couple years, and finally, right at the prime time there, 8 o'clock Eastern, on May 2nd, 1982, the Weather Channel began. And here's a real quick clip from, this is the audio, obviously, of that moment.
Welcome to the Weather Channel, the non-ending weather telethon. I'm Bruce Edwards, glad to be with you this evening.
And I'm Andre Bernier, glad you can join us from wherever you're viewing across the country. Hello, everybody.
We were the fortunate pair that happened by the luck of the draw to choose this premier showing of the Weather Channel. We're very pleased to be with you tonight. And without any further ado, let's get to the weather happenings across the nation. Headlining the weather news, it was a high plains heat wave today as temperatures continue to soar up into the Dakotas.
So I was hooked. I mean, I really was. It was 24 hours a day of weather, and it was just geek time for Mark and millions of other people. It took a little while for the Weather Channel to catch on, obviously, but those early days were amazing. I learned so much from some of the original people that were there. I think about Bill Keneally, eventually Jim Cantore was in there, Dave Schwartz, Mark Mancuso. Interestingly enough, Mark Mancuso came from Eastern North Carolina. We kind of figured that something was happening, by the way, in the very early 80s there, because our local TV weather personalities, male and female, were disappearing. And in a good way. They weren't involved with the mafia or something. No, it was the Weather Channel mafia. A good thing, right? They were going to go down and work in Atlanta. We didn't know that. It was probably pretty secretive. But Mark Mancuso disappeared from Eastern North Carolina. Craig Weber was in New Bern at WCTI, an ABC station in New Bern, and he vanished, and like, where were these people going? And there was rumor that there was going to be a new network starting down in Atlanta. Of course, CNN, I believe they began in 1980 from Ted Turner, the cable news network. So the Weather Channel was going to be news and information 24/7. They would eventually go out into the field. You know, you had, I'm trying to remember these folks. It was like Kristen Dodd, Rich Johnson, Cheryl Lemke. I've already mentioned Mancuso. Dave Schwartz was there. And eventually, Jim Cantore. I guess I could look him up on Wikipedia and see when he joined the Weather Channel. But he became a staple. We had John Hope, of course, that was the hurricane expert there. I don't remember what year he joined. But the bottom line, the Weather Channel was educational first and foremost for yours truly. It really was. I learned so much because they had, you know, degreed meteorologists and a bunch of them, and dozens. And they were called OCMs, or on-camera meteorologists. And it was really, really neat. And I was obsessed with it. I would watch it all the time. And I loved it. So anyway, that grew and evolved. And, you know, I got older. I finally went to college. And, you know, we fast forward all the way to, you know, 2008, 2009. And the Weather Channel evolved over the time as well. Media in general was changing, of course. And it came to pass that eventually the Weather Channel would be put up for sale. And this began, I don't know when the talks started. You know, I don't have any inside information. I'm sure there might even be a book about it out there somewhere. But in early 2008, as the story goes, Landmark Communications, and I think actually Landmark was based out of Southeast Virginia, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I'm wrong. I just, for some reason, that comes to mind. But anyway, early 08, they decided, Landmark did, that they're going to put the Weather Channel and its assets up for sale. So it took a little bit of time, of course. By summertime, sometime in early July, I believe it was, a very interesting group of three different entities agreed to jointly purchase the Weather Channel from Landmark, and that would be NBC Universal, Bain Capital. I always think of Bain from The Dark Knight Rises every time I hear Bain Capital, just throwing that out there. And then the Blackstone Group. That sounds like a pretty serious group of investors, right? It's got a good name to it. Anyway, those that trio there, NBC Universal, Bain Capital, and Blackstone Group, agreed to purchase the Weather Channel from Landmark. And ironically, that deal was finalized on September 12th, 2008. Where was I? I was in Galveston with Watkins for Hurricane Ike. And it's interesting, and this is where it all sort of filters down to affecting me. You're like, hey man, did you have stock in the Weather Channel early? Like, is there something you hadn't told us? You've been holding out? No. It's not that exciting, but there is a connection. And then there, like I said, there will be a bigger connection, and there's a lot more reasons why I'm telling you this than just, oh, the Weather Channel switched hands and I had a little bit of a role eventually. There's more to it. Always more, right? And that was when I remember just so vividly when I was at the hotel, the San Luis, in Galveston, my room, which was interestingly purchased by CNN, because remember we were working with CNN, Mike and I, the Hurricane Track program, CNN was not paying me, but they did cover expenses. They would, and I talked about this before in season three, but just to recap, you know, they would cover hotel rooms and provide fuel and things like that, which was a substantial cost that would be saved. So we're up on the, I think it was like the 11th floor, something like that, of the San Luis. It was down near the corner, nice big room. And we were catty corner from a suite. And that suite was Jim Cantore's room. No kidding. Mike and I were basically next door to Cantore's room. Now, obviously, Jim is working with the Weather Channel, Mike and I working with CNN, and I remember there was this lady that we were working with, a producer, I believe her name was Sarah Westfelt, if memory serves, and she and Jim and Mike and I were all in the elevator at the same time, and I remember him commenting to her, because they were, you know, striking up a conversation. I think she was wearing a lanyard with a CNN ID thing in it or whatever, and he picked up on that, and Jim is very outgoing, and he was talking to her, oh, CNN, whatever. And of course, Jim knew me. I had known him since 04. And anyway, we were all talking, and he mentioned something about that if CNN, or basically Turner, had bid just a little bit more. I remember he teased her, yeah, y'all could have had us and we could have been working together if y'all had just bid a little bit more. I'm paraphrasing. I didn't write down the exact quote. But that's where I started wondering, like, oh, I didn't realize that, I guess, Turner Broadcasting Systems, TBS or whatever you want to call it, or Ted Turner's Enterprises, was even in the running. You know, I don't read the trades. Didn't then, don't now. We have Wikipedia for that now, right? And Twitter. But back then we did not. And so there was that interesting little quip from Jim to Sarah about, yeah, you know, CNN could have owned us and we'd all be working together. Instead, we're competing. And he was nice about it. He was just being, you know, cleverly passive aggressive, I guess. And whatever. And we all went to our respective rooms, and that was that. Actually, Mike and I, just as a little side note, at that point during Ike, we were still staying down at the La Quinta on my dime, and then once Sarah left and went into Houston, we took over her room, and that again was catty corner to Jim Cantore's room. Sarah vacated and went on into Houston to help produce there with whomever some of the big talent was in the Houston area. But anyway, so yes, the Weather Channel, interestingly enough, I guess they finalized it. What does that mean? They signed the papers, I guess. Did they have PDF files back in 08, you know, in DocuSign? Maybe, maybe not. But they did that on September 12th. And I just thought that was really interesting because the conversation that Jim and Sarah and then Mike and I were just kind of privy to happened on September 12th, 2008, in an elevator in Galveston, Texas, at the San Luis Resort. We kind of got a little bit of inside insight, if that's a phrase, it is now, a little bit of a peek into that world there. As I, you know, certainly Jim, a big star then, still a big star at the Weather Channel, he knew that the deal had been done. I don't know, again, what kind of press releases were issued in the coming hours, but yes, the Weather Channel changed hands in September, and it took a while, but as we got into 09, there were other changes. Different people were let go. It became a pretty big controversy. In fact, I think it was like in the fall of 08 through 09, they laid off like 7 long-time OCMs, on-camera meteorologists, including some of those folks that I mentioned. It was like Christina Abernathy, Kristen Dodd, Rich Johnson was let go, Cheryl Lemke, Mancuso got the axe, and the just beloved Dave Schwartz. He was great. I really liked him, and it was a shame that they had let him go. He actually came back several years later before the unfortunate scourge of cancer took him from our world. Dave was always just fantastic on TV. I met him a couple of times, but I'm getting ahead of myself. That's later. So this matters because, again, eventually I would become part of the Weather Channel family, but not yet. We tried in 05, Jesse and I did, if you remember that, and go back and listen to some, I don't remember what episode it was, but there were attempts over the years, the Weather Channel coming to me. I remember in 2000, Steve Lyons tried to work something out with us with the Hurricane Track project. And then again in 05. But in 08, yes, I was working with CNN not for CNN. That would have been nice. Remember, I tried. I gave them a heck of a proposal, and they just didn't see fit to green light it, and we would just stay partners going into 2009. And they would, you know, continue to cover expenses and things like that. That didn't change, but nope, no contract with Turner and no contract at this point in time, 08 into 09, with the Weather Channel. But skipping ahead just a little bit, and since this is, you know, my podcast, whatever, we can jump around and I can bend the rules some. It doesn't have to be strictly chronological. I'm trying to tell stories here. Interestingly enough, the way this sort of all ties in, once we get to the spring of 09, I remember, again, vividly, I was down in Fort Lauderdale. My good friend and colleague, Tim Millar, had paid for me to come down to the Florida Governor's Hurricane Conference. So I drove the Tahoe. He paid to have it exhibited inside the convention center. Tim, just by the way, how did he pay for it? What is he, like Bruce Wayne or something? All these superhero names I keep bringing up, or villains as Bane. Anyway, easily distracted, am I? Tim had the Cyclone Research Group, and it was a nonprofit, and he had a pretty good endowment. He was bringing in philanthropic, is that the word, money? And so he saw fit to help, you know, try to keep me going. A lot of people did. They didn't, you know, there were certain people that knew about my financial struggles. You know, I didn't publish it everywhere, but close friends and colleagues, you know, they knew, hey, yeah, Lowe's was gone. What's Mark going to do? We don't want him to just disappear and whatnot. So Tim was one of these great knights in shining armor, if you will, that would help out. And he had me come down, paid the expenses to the Florida Governor's Conference. And I remember I was somewhere just in Fort Lauderdale one afternoon. It was probably in May. I think that's when that conference is. And the phone rings, and it's Jim Cantore. And he was absolutely just a mile a second. Just, hey, Mark, Jim Cantore here. Hey, what's going on? Well, I'm down at the Florida Governor's Conference. Yeah, great. Good for you. Listen, I've been talking to some big-time people at NBC, and we're really interested in you. And there it began. All right? That's what I'm gonna tease that with that phone call. That's what he said. There, the people at NBC, because NBC, I think, was the bigger shareholder of the three between NBC, Bain Capital, and who was the other one? I'm already forgetting. It was Bain and Blackstone. Sorry, I had to, you know, shake the marbles loose in my old head here. I think NBC had the bigger, well, I mean, too, they're a big broadcast company. The other two, I guess, are like investment groups or something. But anyway, he was very excited and said, you know, basically, we need to get you to Atlanta at some point, and we want to work with you, with your remote cams and just what you do and whatever. I mean, he knew. Jim, like I said, I met him in 04. He was aware of my ambition, my innovation, my persistence, and just whatever. And we got along, and, you know, every once in a while we would chat, and he was excited. I mean, this came out of nowhere. Nowhere. There were no emails and, hey, we're thinking about, like, just bam, phone call from Jim wanting to know, you know, would I be interested in talking to the Weather Channel? Of course, yeah, sure. So we're going to get to that, you know, when I finally did talk to them later in 2009. All right, if I may, I want to do one more time jump before we wrap up this episode, back to 2008. And it's important because 08 was impactful in a lot of ways, especially Hurricane Ike. That led to a lot of exposure. There were elements to it that were very successful, just it wasn't successful enough to carry me through financially into 2009. But there were a lot of positives. Again, the whole CNN exposure, and that led to an email that I got during Ike, and again, that time jump I talk about, we're going to go back to 08 for a little bit, And then we'll kind of wrap things up as we spill back into 2009 with a little bit of momentum here. And that happened when I got this email from a gentleman from San Diego. His name was Chris, and he owned a company out there called All Road Sat. And it was like a satellite phone and BGAN, broadband, global area network, rental, sales, rental, whatever, for satellite phones, all things related to satellite technology and stuff like that. He had seen my work on CNN and was really impressed, he said, and wanted to know if I take sponsors. And I was like, hey, this is kind of neat. I remember showing Watkins that email while we were still in Galveston during the hurricane. And then, of course, it ended. We got back home, and then, you know, whatever number of days later, I got back in touch with Chris. We eventually spoke on the phone, and even though it was a small company, he's like an investor. He had a hand in, I believe, he was even on the board of that LifeProof company that makes the LifeProof cases. I think he had a hand in that. Very big into animal welfare, you know, against abuse and whatnot for animals. Comes from the UK. I never got to meet him, but just a real nice guy. Very supportive and interested in what I was doing with Hurricane Track. And yeah, it took a few weeks, but we agreed that he would become a sponsor, and All Road Sat would be the sponsor of what we're doing for 2009. So the agreement was, starting in January of 2009, he would send me a check for $1,000 every month for the whole year. And then we would reevaluate everything for 2010 and so forth. So this was good. This was some hope, a little bit of light at the tunnel here. Where otherwise there was this train headed towards me called, you know, financial ruin because, I mean, the whole country was in trouble, honestly. I mean, ill except for bankers and those that, you know, profited from the financial crisis, and there were those that did. There's been books and movies made about it. But for entrepreneurs and small businesses like me, the deck was definitely stacked against us. The whole mortgage industry, you name it, it just didn't work out. My family and I were trying to figure things out ourselves, you know, had to move from our house in Leland into a rental in Wilmington and get ready for bankruptcy and just, you know, surviving and trying to hang on, me as a business, us as a family, you know, financially. But we all had each other's backs. I mean, it was good. This was a great new beginning with this potential sponsorship that turned into a reality with All Road Sat, and that got me into 2009. And as we will talk about, or I will tell you, I guess more accurately, in the next episode, as we progress through 2009, especially the first few months and into the spring, I eventually work with Tim Millar, my buddy Tim Millar with Cyclone Research Group, and I'll go down to the Florida Governor's Conference in Florida in May of 2009. And there's going to be a very important phone call that comes in. I'll talk about that in more detail. I kind of hinted about it earlier, but we'll get into that. We'll talk about basically from May on as we, you know, get deeper into the year 2009. We'll do that in the next episode here of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. All right? All right, well, that'll do it for this episode. You know, not anything earth-shattering, but a good introduction as to where we're going to go this season, season four of the podcast series. Again, we're going to cover 09 through 12. And at the end of the whole thing in May of this season, a really blockbuster episode. Like I said before, I've already figured out who are going to be the guests. What are we going to talk about? I'm looking forward to that for sure. But between now and then, we got a lot of ground to cover. That is for sure. And I'm really looking forward to taking you with me on that journey, as we have done here for the last several years. And now we're beginning again with season four of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. Thanks again so much for your support of it. I do appreciate it more than you will ever know. I really do mean that from the bottom of my heart. It's great to be able to tell you these inside, intimate details of my career, the good, the bad, and sometimes the ugly. Very little bit of ugly, though. Very small amounts of that. Most of it's been just amazing, and you have been a part of that for several of these years now, and I do appreciate that very, very much. All right, that is it from me for now. Again, you know this. I am Mark Sedeth. Hurricane Track, that's us, that's you, that's all of us. I will be back with you next week with another edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway.